Welcome to the after party. It's time to change. You're just getting started. You can teach an old dog new ways, and not just on Saturday.
Hey, you guys, it's Anna David with After Party Pod. How are you? Podcast all about addiction recovery, other shit. That's interesting. I'm trying not to swear. It's not that I'm trying not to swear. It's that suddenly swearing started to feel weird. How weird is that? I started to feel uncomfortable with it. And so I've just sort of stopped. Present situation not included. Anyway, hey, it's great. I haven't talked to you guys in a while. I consider this a conversation, which is a little insane because you don't talk back, except some of you do. You email me and I love it so much. Been getting some fantastic emails from you guys lately. If you are new to the show, hey, so glad you're here. Really glad. And what do I want to tell you? Okay, so I was a guest on the podcast, The Mental Illness Happy Hour, which you may not know was completely the inspiration for this podcast. It was when I saw that Paul Gilmartin, hilarious guy, was doing this podcast that was about incredibly serious / disturbing things. And he takes them really seriously. I'm a little less serious over here. Anyway, he knows this. That was sort of how I thought I could do this After Party Pod. Anyway, I was on his podcast. We recorded it maybe 6 months ago, 3 or 4 months ago. I don't know. And then he just posted it last week. And I was nervous. You got into some incredibly deep, disturbing stuff on his podcast. And so I was feeling very weird that day, and I don't always listen to everything, but I wanted to listen before kind of retweeting and all of that stuff. And so I waited till I felt a little bit better, and I listened, and I wasn't at all disturbed by the things I said. What I was disturbed by was the fact that I said, you know, I don't know. I didn't listen to the whole thing. I heard myself say it maybe 100 times, and it was... it was too much. I don't normally say those two words together. I think I was actually, it's scary to talk about the things we were talking about. And I think that that was, I don't sound scared. I don't sound uncomfortable, but I think that that was possibly indicative of those feelings that I was having. So anyway, what do I want to tell you? That's that. Go listen if you want. I did not social media because of this whole, you know, thing. And what else? Been a super tumultuous time in my head. Absolutely nothing tumultuous going on out in my world. You kind of got to be a girl, a woman, a chick to get this, but just hormones out of control, not in a good way. And I don't know, you combine that with alcoholism, and I thought it wasn't going to, just weepy over nothing. Everything's great. So that was really strange. And I'll tell you something, I could not take it. It's kind of going, be fine for a couple days, then not at all fine, then fine again. And, in that time I went to Palm Springs with a friend and I was weepy there. The fact that I was having a great time didn't seem to change that at all. Anyway, last week I said, I got to get out of town. I booked a random Airbnb in Ojai. Ojai is a place I love. And I thought, is this a great idea to go by yourself to some random place? You don't, whatever. I did it. It was amazing. It changed everything. So shout out to Ojai. I ended up booking a room in this house with these two women in a relationship who happened to be sober. We just stumbled on that information because I mentioned it was 420, and I go, oh, you know, 420. And one of them said, I don't know what that means. And I said, well, you know, it's a big day for potheads. You know, I'm sober. So I, you know, and they were like, me too. So, but anyway, more importantly, one of them is an acupuncturist, and she does this thing called fork tuning. I had never heard of it either. She said it puts you in balance. And I said, what I need more than anything is balance right now. So I lay on this table. She did these, had these forks, and they did sounds. It was a sound therapy thing. I got off that table. I felt completely fine for the first time in a month. I can't explain what happened. But the weekend was great. I rented a bike. I went on a hike. I went to the best cafe ever. And I ran into a friend that was super coincidental on my hike. It was bizarre. I asked her for directions. I said, is this the way the hike is? And she goes, Anna? Anyway, it was very strange. Now, getting back to why you are here to listen to my interview with Richard Rushfield, who is one of my favorite people on earth. He is a good friend of mine. I never see him anymore because he's had two children in the past few years and he doesn't leave his house, he says, except to go to his fabulous jobs, of which he has had many. He's an author of three books. One is about American Idol. One is his memoir about his college years called Don't Follow Me, I'm Lost. And then he did one a long time ago called On Spec. Now, he has worked everywhere. He's been a Vanity Fair contributor for, I think, 15 years. He worked at the LA Times. He worked at Gawker. He worked at BuzzFeed. He worked at Yahoo. And he is now the editor-in-chief of a site called HitFix. Now, this is a departure. We didn't talk about addiction and recovery. We talked about healthy relationships. Now, Richard is somebody who... And I'm not saying this isn't true. He always professes to be the great expert on relationships. I often do go to him, usually over IM, and ask his advice on things. And it's a very specific tact he takes. And he's a dry wit, you will learn momentarily. But he's entirely serious about all of this. And he's in a happy marriage with a beautiful woman. So there you go. So this is it. Enjoy Richard Rushfield.
I first started taking drugs by chewing blocks of hash.
Oh my God. I think my copy has like blood stains on it from shooting up while reading it.
Party animal. I hate to say that because that makes me sound Paris Hilton-y. I was on the, as right. I call it, the Autobahn to nowhere.
I'm very lucky because would you have wanted to have a celebrity junkie for a dad?
Getting started here, and
works. Talk a little about. Listen, don't even say
we're getting. We're started.
Oh, this is on.
Yeah.
Oh well, you were just asking me what's okay to talk about.
I know. I feel like you could hold this here that's all comfortable.
Right. Somewhat.
Now, no, I know. We're instead just pressure's on. We're just going to get
no
into it.
There's no theme song. There's no music. There's no...
We don't play that for you. You know what? By the way, you are the reason this podcast exists because...
Of course.
You started yours and I said,
yes.
How hard can it be?
Exactly. And how hard is it?
It's, you know what? Actually putting it together and all of that is not hard. Finding guests is hard.
The hardest part was on my podcast, we would have panels...
Yes.
Where we'd have three people, all of whom would be unemployed, but getting three unemployed people to commit to get on the phone at the same time was hell.
Don't forget, I was on two of them.
You were solo, though.
So. I was unemployed, technically. I was building the site.
I was unemployed as well. But it went the panel part where it was three people, one of whom was me,
mm-hmm.
and two other people, getting them all... finding a time when three unemployed people could all be on the phone at the same time for half an hour was hell on earth.
Right.
I'll never go through that again in my life.
And the sound wasn't terrific. Because of the phones.
It was Skype, mostly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, doesn't matter. You are our first guest to be here, no, not ever, to be here to discuss... healthy relationships, which is the direction the podcast is going in. We are not talking, sorry guys, we are not talking about addiction and recovery this week.
I think that's a good move for you. I think people have a lot more to say about the...
other things.
People want to hear a lot more about the relationships than they want to hear about people's drug addict issues.
Well, you know what? The readers who send me these incredibly moving emails may disagree. Sorry, the listeners. Yeah. Apology.
Well, have them call me.
So how did you come to be the sort of relationship expert that you are today?
Well, that's very interesting, Anna David. A couple ways. First of all, I'm a student of history, and history shows you the patterns and everything that happens. So I come into it with an intuitive, with a not intuitive, a basic knowledge of how today's mistakes fit into larger patterns. You know, and we take it back to the ancient Greeks. All your relationship mistakes go back to the dawn of civilization. So I know that. Second, I worked on the show Blind Date. I was a producer on Blind Date, which was an incredible school of relationship-ology. I'm not sure what the exact science is called, but...
Was it really, though?
Wait, Jimmy?
I mean, it's manufactured blind dates. So how does that teach you? What did that teach you about relationships?
It taught me absolutely everything. Everything you need to know about relationships you learned on date. It was, I considered, based on my experience, I have taken this part, and this is part of what qualifies me. I have taken a lot of notes, several pages of notes for a potential book project that came out of my blind date period. Somewhere, it was about six computers ago, so I'm not sure if I still if have that, but it's probably on a floppy disk somewhere. a blind date, a book entitled You Lost Me at Hello, The Mistakes People Make
That's funny.
First date. Yes, thank you very much. And it's very true. It all, that first impression, it's pretty much 98% decided there.
That is so not true.
Yes, it is. You may not think it's true. You may not think, but you have decided, you don't think it's true because you're remembering the time, oh, I didn't like this guy at first glance, but then he talked, but then he, I saw another side of him, I came around. But deep inside, you knew that you would see that other side and you wanted to be convinced at the first glance. So it was all there. It was all written.
I would agree.
He could have dropped the ball. He could have blown it on the way to that contract fulfillment. But
right. But I. What about? I would agree that you know if you're open to it. But that that thing that like a woman knows in 5 seconds if she's going to sleep with a guy is absolutely untrue.
She may not know consciously, but intuitively, yes.
I've just had the experience too many times, and I am very in touch with my subconscious.
I think you need to look a little deeper then.
So you learned on Blind Date all the things that people can do wrong.
Yes, I did. And then I also, qualifies me, I am friends with an author named Robert Greene.
I'm sure I didn't know you were friends.
Yes, very close friends. I haven't seen him in a few years, but since the early 90s.
Is Robert Greene in a happy relationship?
Last I saw him, he was married and doing very, very
I thought
wonderful.
He wasn't. I thought the whole thing was that he was a, you know, those
You're referring
teach.
To Robert Greene,
the author of Power.
Laws of Power and The Art of Seduction.
Yeah.
I am friends with him. It's probably been about 3 years since we've caught up. I don't really, as you know, I don't really see people anymore.
That's 100% true.
Last I saw, he was happily married. It was, unless he got a divorce and not mentioned it to me.
Do you think that, I mean, I don't know him. I have absolutely listened to him and found what he has to say fascinating, read parts of those books. But are those happy unions that are, I don't want to say manipulated, but manipulated?
I think he would tell you, I think, Robert, if I may speak for Robert Greene, Robert Greene, if you're listening, thanks to you for granting me permission to speak for you. I think he would tell you that there is manipulation in all relationships. There's manipulation and strategy and positioning, and you can either do that unconsciously and just sort of be swept along or pretend that it's all just natural, or you can be aware of what's happening and take charge of it.
Now, what would you say the main tenets of his instruction are, is?
What I take away from it is it's a lot of things. The lesson of green that made the biggest impression on me is the law of misdirection.
Mm-hmm.
That what people tell you about themselves or what they try to convey is the opposite of how they feel about themselves, really. So if you see a woman wearing a lot of boas and crazy colors and everything, is it because she thinks she's exciting and really fun, or is it because, in fact, she thinks she's boring and she's overcompensating? If you see someone dressing overtly very sexually, mm-hmm. is it because they really at their core see themselves as a sexual being, or they have some discomfort with their sexuality that they're trying to mask and over?
As somebody who's wearing an extremely bright color that I would argue is a pretty sexy top, I know you don't see me that way, so it's hard for you to tell. I don't know if I should take offense. Because you're just silent.
I'm waiting to see where you're going to go with this.
I mean, I don't think, I'm so unexciting and so asexual. Hardly. I wouldn't say I'll walk around with, like, I'm so exciting and so sexual either.
I don't think that's...
Let's clarify that I'm wearing a nice top. This is not a video podcast.
I mean, I think we need some visual aid here for the viewers, but I don't see that necessarily as when I was thinking of overtly sexual clothes, micro skirts and very.
Right.
I don't necessarily see this as a hooker's ensemble.
Thank you. That is the nicest thing you have ever said to me.
That's you're not necessarily wearing hooker clothes.
Thank you. Thank you at work on a Friday. Good to know. Now, so people, what they say and what they project is often the opposite of who they really are.
Yes, and you need to speak to people, but they will have no respect for you if you fall for their con. So if someone is dressing like a crazy person and you say to them, "You're so crazy, you're so wild, let's go do wild things, you wild person," they will think they will be worried that they will think you have fallen for this thing. They will not respect you for it. They will be in the fear that you will see the real them.
Mm-hmm.
They put them on an uncomfortable place. You have to speak through to the real person there.
But aren't they uncomfortable that you see the real them right away?
You have to give them you see it and then you pull back.
Mm-hmm.
So you see it and then you withdraw. You don't go and occupy their personal space.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then you let
How them, do you do that?
It varies person to person, and the author Green defies many personality types. Mm-hmm. And also he says there's not one strategy. There's many. I think he defines 15 different personality types, and they all respond in different ways to different things. His book is available on Amazon.
Sure is.
I highly. Probably in audio form.
Probably.
Also. It's fascinating. It draws lessons from history, as
mm-hmm.
I was saying.
And, mm-hmm.
Everyone can benefit. When he came out with that book, I was a single man,
mm-hmm.
and I thought, let me give this a try.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so immediately transformative and successful that within about a week, it became a burdensome to have this enormous success. And I said, I need to disarm because I'm too tired to deal with this.
In a week, how did you meet all these women?
I'll tell you one story, a lesson from Green. There was a dinner. Some friends had said they would set me up with. They were a couple and they had some. Someone they knew, they said they would set me up with her. And and we sat down at the dinner, and she immediately just like looked at me and looked right through me, mm-hmm. like this was going nowhere, and then proceeded to just sort of ignore me for about half the dinner. And I recalled the laws of Robert Greene: create mystery. He says it is always of value to people to think you are desired by a mimetic desire is probably the most important rule, mm-hmm. that we desire what others desire. Mm-hmm. So it is always of value. Create mystery. Do not fill in all the dark spaces in your profile. Leave the dark spaces there. Don't be quick to reassure everybody that you're totally available and you're totally free and mm-hmm. there's nothing else going on and mm-hmm. you're there for them 100%. So learning all this, this was in the early days of cell phone technology. I came late to cell phones probably, mm-hmm. but this was a day when this was, some people had them, some people don't still. It was on the cusp.
Mm-hmm.
So this dinner wasn't going particularly well. I said, all right, enough of this. And I said to the woman, I said, can I borrow your cell phone?
Mm-hmm.
She said, what? And I said, can I borrow the phone?
Mm-hmm.
And she was sort of stunned and just sort of handed it over and said, okay. And I walked out, mm-hmm. And I went outside and I called a friend and I sat on a bench for about 20 minutes talking to a friend. And then I came in, I put the phone on the table and said, thanks. No, with that, I was going to end. Let me tell you how the tables turned there.
Really?
She would have married me right then and there, that moment.
Did you end up dating her?
No.
Why not?
I wasn't interested, but this was another law of Robert Greene, that you need to encourage everybody to be interested in you,
mm-hmm.
always, because mimetic desire is what creates desire.
So right.
You need to win every one of those situations, even if it doesn't. Even if it doesn't, it builds up your your credibility or something. So.
But I mean, who doesn't know that? No offense.
Well,
your example is amazing. I think, but isn't that the whole method? The
people
idea.
People know it, but they don't have the discipline to.
Right. I would agree.
To go with it, and the first. And on their first date, they'll say to the guy, he'll say, "Are you free Saturday night?" And they'll say, "Oh no, I'm going out with my friends. We're just a couple girlfriends and I. We're going out." Then they'll stumble to reassure them. They're, "Don't worry, there's no one else in my life."
Who does that?
Lots of people.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe
nobody does. I don't know.
Yeah, what do you know? You've been home.
Maybe that's just what I did. Maybe it was just me.
Now, how did you befriend Robert Greene?
Robert Greene and I met on a bus tour of old lounges of the San Gabriel Valley.
What?
Or the Antelope Valley about 1993.
Was this like a press thing, or this you just happened to go on this?
No, a friend organized.
Oh, I see. He was a friend of a friend.
Yes, he was a friend of a friend, is the correct answer.
And so then, because I remember you told me about this before, and I said, oh, is this how you won Nicole, your wife, over? And you said no.
No.
You didn't need it on that one, because that was just sort of...
Yeah, that just happened.
Was that love at first sight?
Very quickly, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, within the first evening, I'd say.
Really?
Yeah.
And did she communicate a lack of availability?
She had just moved to Los Angeles.
Right.
Days before, like mm-hmm. 2 days before that.
Mm-hmm.
So her schedule was pretty free, and there was no way around.
Why didn't she need to do that to win you in?
So I will quote Nick, the actor Nick Nolte, quoting Stanislavski, the great teacher of acting, or maybe he was quoting Lee Strasberg. He was quoting
one of them. Starts with an S.
But we interviewed him. He told, we talked about the method and all the things he went through and the preparation and all that. And he said he had talked to his acting teacher. I guess it was Lee Strasberg. And he said, and he was talking about all this method and all that this person taught and all the ways to teach. And the teacher said to him, well, you know, this is just what you do when things don't click. When it clicks, you don't need any of this.
Right. Got it. I mean, shouldn't we all be wanting the click, as Tennessee Williams wrote about alcohol? See, I just brought it back.
Oh. You should be wanting it. It's a great thing to want for. You can sit and wait for it if you wish. Maybe it'll come. Maybe it won't. You know, a lot of great roles, a lot of Academy Awards were won by people who didn't wait for the click to come and use the method to create a great.
Well, I'm
great
talking part. About with relationships, not with acting. Yeah, are you saying they're one and the same?
It's like, it's very hard for lives to merge and come together. When you're on different tracks, you have different things going on, you have different priorities, you know. At least 40% of the things any other person does are going to bug you if you spend too much time with them.
Right.
You know, all this stuff. So it's kind of like, just, you got to get the plane off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Until you got some cruising attitude and everybody can calm down and you're in there. And it's kind of, you know, whatever gets the plane off the ground.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what I say. It's, you got to get to that point, whether it's, you know, a month in, 6 months in, wherever it is, where, you know, some places they never get to that. They spend their lives together, and they never. That there's always uneasiness, but you just got to get to a place where it's like you're not worried about all this. Just basic. How do we make this mesh stuff? And are we right? And all that, and everybody just relaxes a little bit, and whatever gets you there, lies, manipulation, deceit, bribes, you know, it's fine, because once you get there, it's gonna have its own momentum that'll be a lot more natural. And before you're there, when you're in the takeoff, you're subjected to a lot of
external
forces that just work against you all the time.
What about people who click or are right for each other, but the timing is off? Do you not believe in timing being off?
Yeah, that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's to be done?
I don't know. You're the expert.
There's 300 million people in America. There's a few billion in the world, and I think there are how many people are there in the world?
Mm-hmm. That seems right.
Some number of billions in the world.
Yeah.
So if your time is off with someone, then, you know, what can you do?
Well, what about,
I mean, like, if your time is off, like, cause the other person's dead, like, there's no self-help book that can overcome that problem.
Yeah. I think that's less of a problem than the person being somewhat unavailable.
But that's who they are. They're dead. They're unavailable. They're in another relationship. They're, you know, they're psychotic, whatever it is. It's, I mean, that's who they are. That's who they, that's part of who they are. And, there's no, you know, that's, if it's, that's another thing that Robert Greene teaches.
Mm-hmm.
Don't wait, nobody's going to win every battle. So pick the battles that are, mm-hmm. that are right for you. And don't waste time on the ones that aren't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What, okay, so since the goal here is to talk about healthy,
yeah,
unhealthy relationships, or an unhealthy relationship with relationships, yeah, transitioning into healthier ones. Yes. What do you have to say about that?
Unhealthy relationships transitioning into healthy ones.
People, let's say people in recovery or people who are just getting over being dysfunctional.
Yeah.
What are the steps they can take if they've had a history of less than functional relationships to have functional ones?
Change everything about yourself would be where I'd start.
They don't know, the listeners don't know your dry sense of humor.
Oh, really?
Okay. No.
Well, it's, you know, in sobriety, when, I, you know, I, I don't speak about my personal journey, but no. I will tell you that I had a reckless youth and
you wrote about in so hilariously in Don't Follow Me, I'm Lost.
I did.
Available on Amazon.
Yes, for Kindle and
Kindle. And
probably get. I think you can get many used copies on Amazon for a penny.
I think mine's available for a penny too.
What a bargain!
Who blurbed that book again?
Can't remember.
I did.
Oh, you did. Yeah, Anna David did. That was a trick question. All of a sudden I was like, did Brady Stenhouse give me a blurb?
Yes, and Robert Greene. Although he probably did. Give me a blurb. You know what? Go on. So your reckless youth.
So I do know something about this, but I had a change of life subsequently. My late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
When you are working from a place of those from a place of your addictive personality,
mm-hmm.
relationship wise, it's all about your neediness. Mm-hmm. It's all about your. You're just desperate for anything to get you out of yourself and not to have to think about yourself and to focus on something else or another person or something. You've probably got all kinds of crazy childhood patterns that you're reliving in destructive ways and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And While that's what's driving you personally, you're not going to have a healthy relationship.
Right. Now, you're talking about active addicts or sober addicts?
No, sober too. And it's when you're active, you're doing, but you're still the same person when you're sober. And
mm-hmm.
You don't become. I don't believe that we become like blank slates where you have no desires and no needs and no
right.
wants for companionship or connection with people. You still want these things, but it becomes less about hiding from yourself that when relationships are important because it gives you a mirror to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It lets you see yourself through another person.
Mm-hmm.
And by seeing that, and that other person either openly or tacitly will point out everything wrong with you, and then usually they'll tell you everything wrong with you, and then you have a chance to grow through it together. Mm-hmm. When you are in your addiction or in that sort of behavior, you aren't looking for that mirror. You're looking to hide and
right to escape. Right.
So until you are comfortable enough with yourself that you are ready for that, you're mm-hmm. ready to grow together. You're ready to not to fix another person, but to fix yourself mm-hmm. in a relationship. To improve yourself.
Well, it's not about fixing another person, because that's.
It's a little project you have that lets you control someone and get the simulacrum of love and affection, and sort of keep you busy and keep the noise right. level high enough that you don't have to listen to the zaniness in your head. That's what it is. But when you are ready to explore what's in your head, until you are at that place that you're ready for that, you don't have a healthy relationship.
What's interesting about your assessment of the yes. unhealthy phase and the healthy phase is they are both focused on the self. One is you're looking for someone to sort of, you know, fill the hole, and the other is you're learning about what's wrong with you. What about the other person, though?
What about them?
When is it about that? Are you saying it never is?
Well, it is a person who is in a similar place wanting to grow through it. Mm-hmm. I mean, both people have to have that capacity to grow and that interest to look in themselves and that openness and all that. So.
But this description implies that you could do it with just about anybody.
There are compatibility questions, there are chemistry questions, but you have to I think when you're young, especially, you focus on like hobbies and do we like the same things,
right?
Do we like, and I think that because that's good stuff on the first few months when you don't have a shared history and you don't own things together or have a house or animals or children, whatever, like that gives you something to talk about, that you both like the same band and you can talk about that band for a little so you don't sit there in awkward silence over dinner. But once you get a little ways into it, that kind of shared hobbies, shared likes, stuff like it becomes very, that's like 20th on the list of
right of
important things, and it really comes down to values. Are the same things about life important to you? Do you have the same definition of what is a good person and what is a bad?
Do you look at life the same way too?
Yes, but it's that, like, do you think about money in the same way?
Right.
Like if money is fantastically important to one person, and their life can't be complete and without being extremely wealthy, and another person is sort of indifferent to it, that's going to be an obstacle. It's family, friend. Do you like being surrounded by? Do you like having people in your life, or are you more, or do you prefer to be isolated from people?
Which is an interesting thing for you to say, because you were the most sociable person I know, and at least what you tell me is you're never around people besides your family anymore.
And it's true.
So if you met Nicole under those circumstances of being a very sociable person, did you both transition? Well, she's way more introverted.
A little event happened in the last 3 years.
No, of course.
That put a damper in our social calendar.
But I've told you about our mutual friend who had a baby at the same time as you and is like more sociable than ever.
That
happens.
That is not the typical case.
No, it's not. It's true.
That is very rare. I have no idea what sort of arrangement or that per, or
she's
or,
the primary
or
caregiver
help, or help that, that.
No. I mean, you know that I like to give you a hard time about that, but
I'm trying to be to not say any unkind things.
Jealousy is an ugly, ugly quality. I think we both agree. Now, there was this book called For Better by Tara Parker Hope, I think is her name.
Yes, I've read this.
Yeah, she's a New York Times columnist. Oh, well, you know, I'm sorry. You can quote Robert Greene. I can quote Tara Parker Hope,
award-winning journalist. Oh, really? How many of the exercises in Keeping the Love That You Find by Dr. Harvell Hendricks have you done?
I don't even know what language you're speaking.
Keeping the Love That You Find by Dr.
You are so much more well-read than I am, and I read a lot.
I did the first chapter of Exercises in Keeping the Love That You Find by Dr. Harvell Hendricks. It was profoundly influential on
when
me.
When did you do that?
When I was in my 20s or something.
Right, so post-Robert Greene?
Because
you had to get the love, then you had to keep it.
No, I think it was before Robert Greene.
Oh, interesting.
He showed me very those exercises tell you very interesting things, none of which I can remember. But it was a real eye opener to some things that I've forgotten.
Well, Tara Parker Hope talks exactly about what you're saying, which is that people believe that it's based on common interests and that is not at all what's important.
So she stole that from me is what you're saying.
I think she did. I think that she actually went into the future and listened to this podcast and then wrote in more of a book.
Trotting this shtick around for a while, so
I realize that.
Should check Facebook and see how many friends is Parker Hope and I have in common to see what's gotten back in her.
You post these opinions on Facebook?
No, I, you know, Pete, someone might have talked at some, like, let the crown jewels out of the bag.
We do, I know as a friend of yours, we do quote you often. So,
I'm not a bit surprised, Joe.
Now, what was I going to say? So healthy, unhealthy to healthy has to do, I mean, a little bit from what you're saying, from narcissism, not quite to selflessness, but to narcissism to awareness.
Yes.
Would you say?
Yes, I would say, I mean, as you say, narcissism never goes away, but hopefully it's not the dominant characteristic. I mean, listen, people can have unhealthy relationships that last for the rest of their lives, so
right.
Healthy and healthy in duration are not necessarily, this synonymous. You can have a perfectly very healthy relationship that, you know, ends for all sorts of reasons. Person getting hit by a car, for instance, doesn't mean the relationship was unhealthy, but some people may wish to seek out an unhealthy relationship, and who are we to object?
Do you think people consciously seek out an unhealthy relationship?
Yes, certainly.
Why?
Because they're wanting to control other people. They want a hostage, not a partner.
Interesting. Now, what percentage of couples, as an expert, I feel you can provide this percentage, are unhappily coexisting?
They might be happy being in a... That might be how their understanding of happiness.
Well, I'm not talking about specifically the people seeking out unhealthy relationships.
Oh. I'll tell you this. I have been surprised at the couples that have worked out. I've gone to many weddings at which I said, I give it a week.
Mm-hmm.
These people have not... There's, you know things about their past, you know things about them, and you say, this is ridiculous, how could they be getting married, this is impossible, and a long time later, they're still going, and who the heck knows? Maybe they got over the things in their past, maybe they have arrangements, you never do know, but the divorce rate is about half, so you start with that.
Well, but you just said duration and healthy are not necessarily synonymous. So there are plenty that stay together that are not happy.
It could be. I guess that's a lesson to me about about my own lesson there. But
oh, good. Did I point out a hole?
You did.
So for your next interview on the topic, you can address that.
I am. But anyway, yes.
Do you believe in therapy to help people with these issues?
I do believe in therapy to a degree. I think we don't lack for spending time focused on ourselves in this society.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you gotta have a firm line there of, okay, when am I talking about important things and when do I just like to sit and make somebody listen to me talk about myself?
Mm-hmm.
And in general, we could all do a little less talking about ourselves.
So no, I would say that is...
No, I'd say there's real issues that people have to get over. It's that helps people work through, and I believe that therapy can be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
People not, you know, I mean, the people have all kinds. There's all kinds of schools of therapy. People have all kinds of different experiences.
No, mm-hmm.
But for your serious issues, but when it just becomes a endless voyage of self-discovery, I'd say go discover the restaurant around the corner, or go discover a book or something.
What specifically could people work on if they are interested? I mean, what could they do on a practical level? They could go out and create mystery and borrow people's phones. That wouldn't really work today.
Yes, they should do the phone gimmick.
They could just use their own phone. Wouldn't be as effective.
No, it's because it's not.
You could pretend.
The brilliance of my phone maneuver there was it had the sort of rudeness to it.
Yeah. It's rude to get up on a blind date and leave.
Take a person's phone.
It's rude to take your own.
Yeah, but that's it's more kind of aggressively rude than that taking your own is kind of passive aggressively rude.
I will tell you that if somebody did that to me, I don't care what you're going to argue, I would be so turned off and probably would leave.
Yeah, you're wrong. But
you've never seen me on a date.
You've never seen anybody take your phone and go outside for half an hour.
That's true. I have had people.
Well, I will say this. Caveat. It was, if it had been just me and her, I wouldn't have done that and left her sitting alone.
Of course. The couple was there.
So she had someone. She was entertained by the people who she seemed to want to talk to more than me.
Right.
In fact, so it was a special circumstance that might be hard for your listeners to recreate.
I mean, that happens. I've been set up. Whatever. Yeah. It doesn't matter. I wouldn't do it anyway.
I don't think it works for women.
I don't think it works for women either. So what, I don't know if there are more female listeners than male listeners, but what would you suggest male and, you know, you can get specific, gender specific.
I think you have to have in your, I think you have to have in your head that you are infinitely desired and desirable. Mm-hmm. You have to start out with the, you have to look, when you look at this person, you have to say, look at them with, in your eyes saying, I know you want me. And I scoff at you for it. You have to give them flashes of seeing through their soul and understand. You can't be entirely just aloof like that. You have to give them flashes of understanding and seeing the thing that nobody else does. These are general. Of course, Robert Greene, as I say, has 15 character types. So this is a very broad generalization. You have to give that. You know, what we all want is someone to see to our core, understand us, and accept us for who we are. So you have to give flashes of that, but then pull away. And you have to, and by all means, do not make yourself too available. I think I've spoken to you about this many times.
No, you haven't many times.
Yes, I have.
That is so not true. I'm so not like that. In fact, I feel like every person I start to date says to me, do you have some weird texting rule? Because you never text back.
Interesting. Well, that's good.
I knew you'd approve. And I'm not even thinking about it usually, even if I really like the person.
Yeah. This is, I would say, the texting is really the death of...
romance.
Yeah. If what you want is hookups, you should have your relationship via text.
Right.
Otherwise, you use it for communicating basic information. I'm running late. I will be there in 15 minutes.
Yes.
But it is not. But you should say, I prefer the phone. I prefer we actually speak.
I would say that in my experience,
telling that to a man is like you know, that's like punching them in the face. Like that's like that, that's the last thing about want to hear, that they have to talk on the phone to somebody.
Last person I was involved with that started calling me on the phone, I was so confused because that hadn't happened to me in so long.
Well, that's
it took some getting used to.
Yeah it's outdated
lost relic.
Yeah, but you can still demand it.
Yeah, if you're, yeah, I mean, yeah, I got used to it, I would say. What, so that is...
And it's just like, you know, when I was young, now we are inundated with, I get work messages all through the night.
Yeah.
Questions and things, and it, you know, it never stops. So, you know, when I was young, my father was a businessman, still is, and but you know, did some important highfalutin work at a...
And he's a lovely guy.
Thank you.
Very good personality.
Yeah, you know, he came home at night, the work was over, unless he had like some memos he had to write or something. But like he wasn't, because there was no email, I mean, people weren't calling the house at 10 at night to say, I just had to ask you a question. And it's just the, when you make people call, most of the non-essential things go away. So the non-essential, like if you make someone call to, if someone has to call to ask, it's 2:30 in the morning, are you up? Probably they're not going to pick up the phone. That's one of the things that will fall.
And you're saying if they text that? No,
you make it very easy for them. You open a channel of very low level communication.
Certainly, if you're up at 2:30 and willing to.
What I'm saying is, you won't get demeaning messages. Like you won't have your relationship trivialized and demeaned by people won't do that to you on the phone like they will on text.
Right, but not all texting relationship, not all courtship or whatever that happens over text.
I think you need to establish first. A pattern of respect and dignity in your communication level before you could open up that.
Now, what else was I going to ask you? So those are your recommendations. Demand phone calls. Yeah. Project busyness.
Yes.
Think I am, of course you desire me.
Yes. Look them in the eye knowing that.
Yeah. And what else?
You know, just send me your questions as you go along, I guess is the best way.
Are you telling my listeners that?
Yeah, that's the best way to do it.
RR at Richard Rushfield, is that what it is?
I'm not going to say it, but if they have access to Google, they could probably figure it out.
Rushfield Babylon, do you still have the site?
It's
long neglected.
Like I say, I remain the editor-in-chief of rushfieldbabylon.com.
Now, what about once in the relationships? You talked about how, you know, a healthy relationship demands that you work on yourself.
Yeah.
What other recommendations do you have for establishing?
So here's the big thing that I would say to if I can address the female half of your listeners.
We don't know the percentages.
Let's
say 50%. Let's say 70.
Okay, if I can address that 70%. So you've got in your possession a bomb that can just destroy any relationship. And what that is in the typical, you have as women the ability to talk forever, incessantly, until just about any man on earth wants to take his own life, like to not have to listen anymore. Even if he loves you, even if you're like, men just, there's only so much talk we want in a day. You know, and it's whatever amount you think is the minimum talk that you should have in the day, what men want is way, way less than that. So whatever they're doing, they're trying to
minimize,
to accommodate and to make you happy, because they'd really rather just say that. But
that is so not, I know so many chatty men. But go on. I don't mean to poke holes. Go on.
These are generalizations.
Yes, they're always exceptions.
What can I tell you? Just practice saying less is what I would do. Just to you.
This is during courtship, or this is during the relationship?
Yeah, your whole life.
Your whole life.
Yeah.
So talk to your friends.
Yeah, basically, it's so here's the numbers on it. Women speak 28,000 words a day on average, of which they speak 7,000 at work. So they have 21,000 left at the end of the day. Men on average speak 11,000 words a day, of which they speak 8,000 a word. So they have 3,000 words left. So you have 21,000 to 3,000. So unless you're subjecting the guy you're with to a lot of listening in life, you need to burn off a lot of those. You need to burn off a good 15,000 of those words somewhere before
but
you get
what about a situation like that you're in when there's two kids and like what your wife is supposed to be calling all these people and burning it off?
When you have two kids, nobody has any anymore. Ability to talk. you're just trying to keep up with the people running around. So that.
Well, okay, so talk less.
Yes. That's it.
That's the key to a healthy relationship.
Yes, yes. Women should talk less. Men should realize, and it's something I work with, that the symbolic importance of things. It's not just about getting things done. It's about showing that you care. It's mm-hmm. about constantly finding ways to show it. Not like getting done the you care thing, but mm-hmm. but you know, it's emptying the dishwasher shows you care. It's mm-hmm. It's not the big deal emptying the dishwasher. It's 2 minutes work, but it's a little effort. So men should look for opportunities to make those symbolic gestures.
Mm-hmm. And what about verbally expressing those?
Yeah, and throw in some words also. So you can kind of
using some of those 3,000 words.
You can work to meet halfway. Like it's use your you got those 3,000 left after work, so use them.
Right.
Put them to good use.
Not all 3,000.
Yeah, don't waste your 3,000, at the bar or whatever. So.
Well, what else would you like to add about healthy relationships?
It's a big field, but they in your heart, don't you?
What do you know? What?
So just listen. I mean, in your heart what if there's something not amiss or.
I think denial is a pretty powerful.
So you need to get in a quiet place and it's, they. I mean, people always say at the end of a relationship, "Yeah, I knew from the beginning." Like, people will get out of 40-year marriages and say, "Yeah, I always knew it wasn't right." But it's. Try to listen to those
signs. Little voices,
and try to listen to those voices, and then if you don't see any red flags, if you search yourself honestly, and you don't see any red flags, then don't get hung up on the little stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The little stuff is not going to be important over the long run.
Pat Allen, another relationship expert who was on uh-huh. the podcast yeah. About a month ago, uh-huh. said,
"How'd he do compared to me?"
She is a renowned woman who you have clearly not heard of. Yeah. But I hadn't heard of Dr. Herman Mueller.
Dr. Harville Hendricks.
So we're even. She says for women, unless you need to call a lawyer, a cop, or an ambulance, shut up about whatever your issue is, basically.
Yeah.
I feel like you'd agree.
Yes, that sounds, the doctor, what's her name?
Pat Allen.
Pat Allen seems she's got her head screwed on, right? That's, I think people want to turn their significant other into their one-stop shopping for mm-hmm. all their needs. Now I have someone, now I have here a therapist, a best friend, a right. chef, a maid, I have one person to do all these things for me.
Right, and with me.
And to be all these roles for me.
Right.
But, if you need a psychiatrist, go to a psychiatrist. Don't turn your significant other into them. If you need a best friend, get a best friend.
Well, and to circle back to where we started, and you said all your knowledge comes from history.
Yes, it does.
In previous...
It does. Everything I've said is grounded in in historical history, fact. So it's incontrovertible.
Now, but in previous generations, when people didn't marry thinking like, oh, it's my soulmate, but it was more like, don't worry, we're wrapping up.
No, I was just saying what I...
More like property and arranged marriages, and you're kind of like, yeah, this is the person, but I'll go out and, especially men, you know, do whatever I want. So was that healthier?
No, that's, I mean... There were different expectations of what a relationship was, though. Mm-hmm. And it was if you look at the 50s, 30 years before the 50s, people didn't even know each other before they got married.
Right.
Like still in the 50s when they got married, they might know each other for a week. So it was a different. Understand, you know, marriage was a
agreement.
Union to make the make a family, and you tried to turn out the best you can. But given that that's how it all came about, there was be a lot of room for a lot of other things, and that's. You watched that show Married at First Sight yet?
No, I don't watch TV.
Well, very interesting show. They meet at the altar on it.
And people agree to be on television and get married.
They say yeah, and they say you walk in there to the wedding chapel and you find out who you're marrying, and you.
And have these unions lasted, or we don't know yet.
So they're on their second season, and some lasted, some didn't. And what they found, the findings of Married at First Sight are that it's interesting that some of the ones where they just felt there was no attraction at the first part but went through with it anyway are the ones that are actually the most successful.
And so according to you, in the back of their minds, they knew that they were attracted and they just didn't admit it to themselves.
I don't know if that 5 second rule is true. I'm not sure
it applies to reality television.
If it applies when those 5 seconds happen when you're at the altar and there's TV kit that might throw off the timeline a little bit. So it's.
Did you see that New York Times piece about how anybody can fall in love with these 30 questions?
No.
Well, it's a much buzzed about piece where, according to the author, you ask the, I don't know if it's 30 questions, you ask the person you're on a date with these certain questions, you look into their eyes, you do this thing.
What kind of questions?
I cannot remember. I mean, like really basic ones. And what's interesting is I went to a party, this guy, Davey Rothbart, do you know him?
No.
He sort of arranged this thing, and I guess it was like 40 people, 20 women, 20 men. You played games, and then you paired up, and you asked each other questions, and then you had to switch on the next one and pair up with somebody else. And they were the same questions, and then it ended with you had to stare into someone's eyes for a minute straight, or 2 minutes, or something like that.
Oh my God!
But anyway. The author of this piece.
And then you give all your money to the Church of Scientology?
No, it was a charity. It was a great party. It was really fun.
Charity. And then they said, we just need you to start coming in for some sessions on the weekend. And
did you watch that? I mean, too off top. Obviously, you watched that documentary.
I didn't watch it because, as you know, we have a mutual friend, a former guest on your show.
Yes. Mark Ebner. Why was he not Facebook posting about that constantly?
He did Facebook.
First of all, why was he not in it?
That I don't know, but the reason I didn't watch it was just because I was friends with him throughout 20 years while he was reporting on this.
And you knew all of it.
And I haven't heard Scientology in the last like 3 or 4 years. It's become a hot button subject.
Yes.
But there's nothing I'd heard that I haven't heard from him before that. So
nothing in there was new to me, but it was fascinating to see it.
It's
available. HBO Go.
I'll say this also. I'll give you one more tip.
Yeah.
Postural echo.
What does that mean?
If they'll do these things on the news. They'll show when couples when they meet in a bar and they're in sync.
Mm-hmm.
Unconsciously, they'll mimic each other's gestures. One will touch their head, and the other one will touch their head.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll become physically and psych, but you can fake that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just start
doing what they do. You're not thinking about what you're saying then.
What's that?
Then you're not focusing on what the person's saying and what you're saying.
You shouldn't. That's another thing.
You shouldn't.
I'm coming up with these rules in the final minutes of never listen to what anybody says. Everything people tell you about themselves is totally untrue. The thing, here's the biggest thing. The thing they insist about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like the thing they insist is like a big deal about them. Like, I'm an honest person.
I really
value honesty most of all.
But that's a good example. There's a lot of people don't insist on anything about themselves.
I'm just saying, if someone makes a big deal about something about themselves,
it's a lie.
That should be a huge red flag that the opposite is true.
Right. Right.
There's
but you listen not to get facts necessarily, but to see how somebody communicates. I would argue that's the most important thing.
They say about watching TV, and they say it's about politicians, that if you really want to understand how a politician watch them talking with the sound off, and you'll, mm-hmm. and you can tell. I think that's very true. I think that's true with dates also. Like just.
You're making dating into the least fun-sounding activity ever. You can't listen. You can't be yourself.
No.
You're spending the whole time mimicking gestures.
Yes. And know,
what about
and
those?
I know your 15 character types from Robert Greene to have the four strategies for each one of those prepared to. I think about these pickup artists also, mm-hmm. but the other thing, it's like. I often thought, why does a guy with a crazy
hat
and curly Q mustache doing magic tricks, why is this appealing to women? And I put it together. It's not that it's appealing to women. It's that it's so unappealing that women know I can have this affair with him and I will never get emotionally attached here. This is a safe place. I will not. That there's no chance that this is going to wind up
being real.
Me desperately in love with him and him not calling me back. That's what.
But women don't often make, or maybe they do make those choices.
I think if you see this what's his Mysteries TV show, you'll see a lot of women do. But I often think you can grow this. You can grow this crazy mustache, and you can learn magic tricks, and you can say all these things, or you just walk up to someone and say, "Hey, did you have a good day today?" And listen to them talk about their day. There's another.
Yeah, that is
probably equally effective.
What about the nag and going, "Great hair, is it
like
colored?"
You could probably just say like,
"How's your day?
How are you?"
That question would make me turn away.
How are you?
So boring.
You say, like, all right, whatever. You just show an interest.
Are you concerned about the drought?
You can show an interest in a person.
Yes, yes.
Those are lovely boots. Where'd you get them?
Yeah.
You could do that.
And
or you can learn a bunch
gay.
Of magic tricks and strategies. Right? Well, yeah, that was a pretty gay question. But
Well, Richard, we must wrap up due to your insanely busy schedule.
It is.
Where can people find you online? I know you are on the Twitter.
I'm on Twitter at Richard Rushfield. I run a little website called HitFix. Work there. And RushfieldBabylon.com is my blog that I don't update very much.
And you wrote an excellent book on American Idol. You're an American Idol expert.
I am, and more importantly, about my memoir of my college years.
Which the aforementioned.
Yes.
Which I loved so much.
Thank you very much. Loved so much that you blurbed it.
And even though the author I knew would someday forget.
that was a trick question. You stumped me there.
Well, nothing else stumped you. I would say this was a very effective and information
packed. As the time flew by,
it does when we're together. Okay, that's it. So yeah, that was Richard Rushfield. Did you learn some things? Do you feel more schooled in relationships? Do you want to go out and read Robert Greene if you haven't already? Anyway, this was, I hope you liked him. He's a delight. This was After Party Pod. Keep listening. Go write a review. Whatever. Go write one right now. You could just do 5 stars and peace out. You don't even have to write anything. Okay. Thanks for listening. See you next time.